they don't know that they're in prison. All they know is that they're in an environment where all their needs are getting met.
Hello, and welcome to the Children of Incarcerated Caregivers International Prison Nursery Podcast. I'm Paul Dosh, Associate Professor of Political Science at McAllister College and a member of the Advisory Board of Children of Incarcerated Caregivers. My guest today is Jane Silfen, the Director of Programs for Our Children, a not-for-profit organization that provides comprehensive programming for incarcerated women and their children and families inside Bedford Hills Correctional Facility in Bedford Hills, New York. She has served as Director of Programs since 2012, has a law degree, and is completing a master's degree in addiction studies and integral recovery for co-occurring disorders. She is a collaborator and recognizes the mothers and children she has worked with for 18 years as central to her own education and advocacy. Welcome, Jane, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, you're most welcome.
So to begin, could you tell us a bit about where you work? And as Director of Programs, what work do you do?
I'm currently the Program Director at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, and we have a contract with the New York State Department of Corrections. So essentially, we partner with them to provide comprehensive programming to the mothers throughout the facility, and we also have programs for grandmothers. And we also have a very unique residential nursery program, which I know is something that we're going to talk about pretty extensively today. But as the program director, I work for Our Children. This is their in-prison program. So we're inside of the correctional facility. And the programs we provide include parenting education, advocacy for the mothers that live there. We have a very, very extensive and unique visitation program, and we are unique in that we provide the transportation for that program for children living anywhere in New York State. And there's different programs depending upon where the children live geographically, but we provide door-to-door service for those kids to visit. We also have a residential nursery unit, which we'll talk about today, which can house up to 25 mothers and 25 babies. We have also an infant daycare center, and that's where the mothers will bring their babies. It's very similar to any daycare center in the community, and that's where the mothers will drop their babies off when they have to go to program. We also have a card shop program, a story corner program, and lots of other smaller little programs to help keep the mothers and the children in the community connected.
Great. So I understand that it's very rare to have such a long-running program, that the Bedford Hills Prison Nursery was the first in the United States, opening over a century ago in 1901. Could you tell us about the history of the facility and how it evolved to where it is?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting history. If you go all the way back to the early 1900s, that was the time of the reformatory movement. So Bedford was actually the actual prison, before it was an actual prison, was a reformatory home for wayward women who were pregnant and also, you know, had gotten into trouble. But the way that they dealt with it back then was these reformatories back in the early 1900s. And most states eliminated all of the reformatories and shut down just that whole like reformatory system, but Bedford instead decided to hold on to their nursery program. And this was very much influenced by, believe it or not, Eleanor Roosevelt. She was really the one that shepherded in the law that still exists today. It's been, you know, modified in different ways and stuff since way back then, but basically the program stayed and the women were able to keep their babies. And around 1970s, so there's like a big gap, I know, between the 30s and the 70s, but truthfully, I don't know kind of the history there. But what I do know is that in 1970, a really wonderful nun, the late Sister Elaine Roulette, she decided that she was actually a teacher. She was in education. And she became really interested and realized that children really needed to see their mothers. And when she was visiting up in at Bedford, and she saw that they had this nursery program, her original role was to find homes for these babies after the women gave birth there. But what she really realized that instead of separating them, she really wanted to keep them united. So when she realized there was a real need to continue to have a program there where the babies could stay with their moms rather than separate them. So that's like the really early, early history of that. And then there was another wonderful woman named Elaine Lord, who at that time was working in Albany. And those two women together actually helped to create what became the first nursery program at Bedford Hills. So it then, you know, kind of evolved more into an actual program with real services rather than it just being a place where the moms were residing, you know, kind of with their babies. And that all stemmed from the rise of what we all know as the attachment theory. And the theory then was that that first year of life for the babies was so important to form healthy attachments to their mothers. So the program really evolved and the role became focusing on how to keep these mothers and babies connected rather than separating them. And that was really kind of the very early history. And it has continued to evolve in many different ways since that time, but it has always been a program that has been supported by not-for-profit organizations. So basically, the Department of Corrections is very interested in having this program, but they're not interested in actually running the program. So they have historically looked for not-for-profit organizations like Our Children to provide the services for these mothers and their babies.
So I'm hearing that that goal of keeping mothers and babies together, identified by Sister Elaine Roulette and Elaine Lord, has sustained the mission, but there's this layer of attachment theory that's grown on top of it. Has the mission grown beyond that, or is that pretty much has remained the core of the mission of why these programs exist, you know, why it's offered to incarcerated women?
I would say that the attachment theory is definitely the core because that first year of a child's life is so important in terms of them being able to form these strong attachments. There was a woman, actually a doctor, her name is Dr. Mary Byrne, and she was a professor at Columbia University School of Nursing. And she was the first person to examine the programs at Bedford Hills and also at our sister facility across the street, which is called Taconic Correctional. So that's a medium security facility in New York, and they also used to have a prison program. So she did a study back in 2011, and it was called Intergenerational Transmission of Attachments for Infants Raised in a Prison Nursery. And this was one of the first long-term studies, and she looked at parents and children in the prison nursery setting, and she determined a few things. And one of the things that she determined, in addition to the fact that mothers were less likely to return if they were given the opportunity to raise their babies, but these babies were also as securely attached as infants that were raised out in the community. And that was really the most meaningful part of this study and why our program exists. And it's also for us why the babies, which we could talk about in terms of how long do our babies stay. And the length of stay for us is definitely different than some of the other prisons that there are in the United States. But something else that I'd like to add to that, in addition to the attachment theory, is just a lot of what I've seen and witnessed over the years that I've been there, is that the programming that we provide, and we'll get a little bit more in into that, is so comprehensive. And many of the women that we work with definitely come from communities and backgrounds that are struggling and have been struggling. So I know a lot of people feel like, oh, a baby shouldn't be in prison. But the thing is that, first of all, the baby doesn't know that they're in prison. They only know that they're with their mother. And the other thing is that we are able, through our programming, to provide them with a not only a really safe environment to raise their child, but we are able to provide them with a community, a really strong, healthy community, and really educate them. And otherwise, a lot of these babies would end up going into the community to families that are already not only financially strapped, but also many are already raising other children of this same incarcerated person.
So I'm curious if the comprehensive programming you're describing, if that is one of the things that differentiates our children's program to other U.S.-based prison nursery programs.
I think that the way that I would want to answer that is I can speak to a lot of what we do. And I will say that we have, for the longest time, and probably since the inception of nursery programs, been the model program. So lots of other programs are definitely modeled after ours, and they all can be a little bit different. But I will say that what definitely sets us apart and makes us a little bit maybe more unique is the extent of the services that we offer. Also, the amount of support that we get, not only financially, but also physically and in kind from the neighboring communities. Bedford Hills and Bedford itself is one of the wealthiest communities, if not the wealthiest community in New York State. So we happen to be geographically located in a place that is so favorable to the women and the families that we serve, because they give so much to our program, not only in the way of volunteering their own services, but also providing a lot of financial support over and above what we get from our contract with New York State. So, for example, one of the things that we now are able to offer, which we've only been doing over the past couple of years, through a grant, through another organization, is we have a doula and lactation specialist that works on the unit like 25 hours a week. So we've been able to really provide the mothers with a lot of support that they need around breastfeeding, ongoing concerns about their baby on a very regular basis. And that's been something that's really kind of enhanced our program over the past couple of years, is the ability to have somebody on the unit that is consistently working with the women surrounding those, I don't want to say issues, but really helping to educate them. And so that's been really nice. And we offer an array of services.
I think you've begun to answer my next question, which is how one makes this environment safe, positive, suitable for children. We're talking about the doulas and lactation consultants. Maybe you could also describe just what these facilities look like. Many of our listeners don't know. What does the Bedford Hills Prison Nursery look like? You mentioned 25 mothers and babies in pairs. And what are the things that you've been able to do in the environment to make it a safe and positive place?
Okay, sure. So let's kind of dive into what does it look like and what are we providing? So the prison, the actual physical layout is they have their own unit. So the best way to kind of describe it or to kind of vision it would be like a big dorm, you know, a big dormitory, and maybe on a college campus, like the whole floor. We have the capacity to accommodate up to 25 mothers and babies. The way that it is set up is that there is a north side and there's a south side, and it's a self-contained unit. And by that, I mean that nobody can access that unit other than the nursery mothers, any of the security staff that's approved, the New York State's DOC security staff that's approved to go up there, and anybody that works for our children as part of this program. So it's a lockdown unit. There's an officer 24/7. So there's usually three different officers that, you know, that do 8-hour shifts, and they have regular bids. So they really understand the unit and the women on the unit. Then when you first get on, we try to bring the women up to the unit when they're about 2 or 3 weeks away from giving birth. In the beginning, they share a room. And even if we're not at capacity, we still encourage mothers to share rooms. So that way they're kind of supporting each other. It's kind of a little bit of a buddy system. And an important thing to say is that there are two different living arrangements, which does depend on the age of the baby. When the mother is still pregnant up until the baby is 4 months old, the mothers will live in a double occupancy room, two beds and two cribs. The babies are between 0 and 4 months old, so they can help and support each other during the often trying and first 4 months. I'd like to also add that while many of these women have multiple children in the community, this for many is the first baby that they're actually raising and doing that with sobriety, more stability, and the wraparound support of our community. Then once the babies are 4 months old, then the mothers will move to our single occupancy wing. And then they're on their own. So it's their own cell unit. They have their own bed, their own crib. Everybody's in the room together, but it's just the mother and the child. There's no roommate now. In the actual residential unit, they have their own kitchen where they can prepare their own food. And they can also prepare food for their baby once they're of age. But they also do receive their meals from the mess hall and they are brought to the unit. Any mother who's part of our nursery program cannot interact with the general population when they're with their babies. So for obviously reasons, that's a security reason. So when they attend programs, their babies will go to the infant center, and we'll talk about that in a second, but the babies will always be with a caregiver when the mother has to go to program. So in terms of their meals, they eat all their meals on the unit. They also have a general rec room there. So just picture just a really large playroom in a home filled with tons of toys. And that's where the mothers and the babies can all get together when the mom's not in program or after dinner. And it's a big, bright, airy room and they can play in there and just, you know, have a really good time. They can do their laundry on the unit. So they have their own laundry. They make the phone calls from their unit. They basically don't leave the unit except when they have to go either to work, which we'll talk about because they still and mandated programming. So even though they're part of our nursery program, they're not excluded from any DOCS mandatories that they need in order to be released from prison. So they still are required to complete all of those. Also, as part of the residential unit, we also, our children has a nursery manager, and that manager is up there 40 hours a week. And the nursery manager will really work with them on how to live as part of a self-contained unit and create harmony and help them really just with a lot of life skills. A lot of them really don't have your basic life skills and they haven't really lived as part of a healthy community before. So that's what our nursery manager will do. We also have a social worker that's on the unit and she provides social work support to them and works with them individually and in group work. Most of the work surrounds what brought them to prison. What are they going to do differently? And what do they need to be successful upon leaving? And we also work a lot of our work with them is reentry, like helping them for, you know, what their next steps are.
And is there substantially more demand for these spots than you can handle? And if, you know, if so, what's the process for eligibility? Restrictions, what happens to mothers who would like to be part of in the nursery, but there's no space for them or they're not permitted?
Well, there's two ways that a mother can become a part of our program. So there is an actual admissions process. So the good news is we've never had to say no to anybody. In terms of the way it works with New York State, that the fact that we have a nursery program doesn't mean that you absolutely qualify for it. So the process is this. So basically, once they can either apply from county or they can apply once they get to Bedford. Usually, the admissions problems can go pretty quickly, but they have to fill out an application. And then the application is reviewed by the executive team. Those are the higher up, the people at Bedford it's actually the New York State Department of Corrections that initially makes the decision about whether or not a woman can get on. And there's a couple things that they look at. the first thing that they look at immediately is, why are they there? If they have a child-related crime, that's an automatic denial. If they have an arson crime, that's something they look at very heavily and strongly, and it's most likely a denial because of the safety factor. Anything other than those two things are at the discretion of the team, of the exec team. They kind of decide. There's a depth of programs, and there's different people on the exec team that kind of look at it first and make a decision, and then it goes up to the superintendent. But they do also look a lot at child protective history. So if the woman has a substantial child protective history and has never raised any of her other children or has had her rights terminated to multiple children, that's a very high risk for denial. But anything other than that is usually an acceptance. And then once they get accepted, that's when Our Children kind of takes over and starts to provide services for these women. One other thing that I would point out is that many families initially, when they find out that, oh, there's a mother who's having, and they've already, you know, been down this road with this mother before, and now she's having another child, many of them are angry about it, not supportive of it, especially those that are already raising multiple children of this incarcerated person's already, or have already said to this mother, I'm just letting you know I am not taking another one. And they're very, for those women, it's really important that they have a place or a program that they can go to with their baby and stay with. And if it ends up being a removal, because it is something we haven't talked about, but just because you get on the nursery doesn't mean you get to stay there. So there are rules and the women have to follow them. And there are occasions, happy, there's few of them and they're rare, but there is an occasion where a mother might get removed, which means the baby has to go. And a lot of times what we see is a family that's originally said, I will not take this baby. Now, 5, 6 months, maybe 7 months, they themselves have formed a relationship with this baby. Whereas they wouldn't take the baby as a newborn, they'll take the baby at 7 or 8 months old. So that's another reason why our program is so important, because that would have been another baby that would have gone into the system rather than, you know, being with a family member. Much easier to take care of a 7th or 8 month old baby than it is, you know, to take on a newborn.
Yeah, so let's talk about those services that are offered to the mothers and babies. I mean, for the mother baby payers that are admitted, can those children go out into the community to spend time with relatives? What else can children do while their mothers are in the program?
To start with, our babies can stay, and this is sort of tied into your question, because other programs are different, and the child can stay longer or until they're a little bit older. But our program is inside of a maximum security prison. So therefore, the rules are different. I guess I'm just going to say they're different because we actually sit inside the facility. Most of our babies stay up until 12 months. However, if the mother is getting out before the baby turns 18 months, then the mother can apply for an extension at 11 months. And she could ask for the baby to stay with her until she is released. But under no circumstances can that baby stay beyond 18 months. So with that said, the answer is no, our babies don't go out into the community to visit with families because they're not with us for that long. However, we do have a very extensive visitation program at Bedford. So we really welcome and encourage families to come and visit the babies inside of the prison. We help provide transportation for these families. Sometimes we also provide funding if they have their own vehicles, but yet, you know, the cost of gas is kind of, you know, difficult for them, then we'll provide some funding. But we have a really warm and welcoming visiting room and a children's center in there. So the families will visit with their loved ones on our actual property. They can't go up to the actual unit, but that's also for security reasons. But the mother and the baby come down to the center and they can visit with their families from 8:30 in the morning till 3:30, 6 out of 7 days a week if they want to. So it's pretty extensive time period that they can spend.
So here in Minnesota, transportation is an enormous challenge for families trying to visit loved ones that are incarcerated. What lessons has our children learned in putting together this important program that provides transportation, maybe for other groups that are trying to emulate that?
So this is what I will say is the most unique thing about our program, and I would also say the best thing about our program, is that we do that piece. What we have found is that the biggest impediment to children visiting with their mothers and the biggest impediment for women inside having ongoing relationships with their family in person is that transportation piece. New York State is a large state, and there are many parts of the state where our women are originally from that have been impacted by poverty and are in, you know, very far and rural areas. So we are very grateful for New York State to provide us with funding to be able to transport these families here. And what our children did as an organization, and we did this through foundations that have helped us with individual really nice donations, we bought our own vehicles. So our children has access to three different types of vehicles that are all owned by our program. And we also have drivers and chaperones that work for our children. And we provide transportation 7 days a week as needed for families, particularly families of nursery mothers, also families of any mother in the general population. We have a very, very extensive visitation program for children that is ongoing and very comprehensive throughout the year. And it just based on where you're geographically located. So for example, children that live in the New York City areas and as far north as Albany and different parts of it. So basically if you're under 3 hours and you live in New York, we have a program for your children and they come monthly. If you're anywhere outside of that region, we have an upstate program and those kids come 4 or 5 times a year for very long weekends. And we house the children with host families. So they get to stay for a couple of days at a time and visit with their moms.
So these are siblings of the baby that they're able to come and stay overnight in housing provided by our children for the weekend.
Well, it could be siblings, yes, but it could also just, so we have programming that extends beyond our nursery program. So the nursery program is just one of the programs that we provide oversight to. So our children has a lot of extensive programming for mothers that we consider in the general population that have families in the community.
Can you say more about other services for incarcerated mothers in general? You've listed several already.
Yes. So we provide for women. And when I say general population, that means any mothers that are not part of our nursery program. So for the general population mothers, we provide visitation programs for them. And like I said before, it depends on where your child lives geographically. And they come alone. They come unaccompanied. And those are for children between the ages of 5 and 18. And the children that live outside of a 3-hour radius from Bedford will be part of our overnight program. So they stay and visit with their moms for several days at a time, and they stay in the community with host families. We provide a very extensive parenting education program for mothers that have kids in the community. And we help them to not only become healthier mothers, but how to parent their child from prison. We have a lot of classes on how to do that. We also have a card shop program so the mothers can come down and the grandmothers and make cards for their children or grandchildren and send them home for them. We have a holiday program, so during the holiday season, the mothers and grandmothers can come down and shop for their children and grandchildren. So when they visit, they have toys to give them for the holiday. They're all brand new gifts. And for those kids that don't visit, we have gift cards. We also have an infant development center, which I haven't really talked about that much, but that is a program that is also supported by our children. And we have an infant development center manager with an extensive history in early education. And that center is open 5 days a week from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. And it is supported also by what we refer to as incarcerated person caregivers. So our children's staff will train incarcerated persons to become caregivers, and then they work in the center, and they are essentially the ones that are taking care of our babies while the nursery mothers are participating in educational programs, working, or going to college, because we also have a college program at Bedford.
So that infant development center is for the infants from birth to 18 months are the participants there?
Yes.
And the caregivers are themselves, many of them are trained incarcerated persons.
Yes, we train them. And then we also train them at a much higher level to act as a doula, which means gives them the ability to sub in for mom on the unit. Sometimes the mothers don't feel well and they themselves have to go to, you know, our residential medical unit for medical treatment. So the baby doesn't have to go home or be separated from their mother. We send a doula up to stay with the baby while the mom is either recovering from, you know, an illness. Sometimes they have to go out to court to fight their case. So in those limited circumstances, we also will provide a doula. The difference between a doula and a caregiver is the doula can actually stay on the unit and live in the room with the baby and take care of the baby while the mother is not present. But that certification takes about 3 years. It's long. It's a lot of training, but it's also very important.
And so is that certification something that's then a job credential after that incarcerated person is no longer incarcerated?
It used to be. That's like a really good question. We used to have one that was actually a certification because it's not anymore. But there used to be a program called Bank Street, and they used to support us and provide that so the women could. So unfortunately, not anymore, but at one point, yes.
Good. Well, maybe that leads to my next question. I mean, I can tell you have a lot of programs in your portfolio as director of programs. What's one particularly positive result you've seen in one of those programs?
There's two ways to look at it. From the mother's perspective, I've seen women that have really grown emotionally and become really responsible, motivated, and dedicated to be a better person because of the opportunities we provide for them to participate in programs with their children. So I think that really motivates them to want to do better because they have such an impact. They become like a really good role model for their child, even from prison. So as mom is growing, it really helps them to form a better relationship with their children. And I think for the child, it's really important that they don't feel this sense of abandonment and they don't really feel like mom has left them. Instead, the services that we provide and the programmings that we have really help to sustain the relationship and either improve what was not there originally, I should take it in a different way, either enhance what maybe was really good and they sort of lost some of it when mom went to prison. But we also have done a lot of repairing. A lot of moms were really not doing the right thing in the community. And now they're in prison and they are doing the right thing. And the children are the beneficiaries of that. Even though there's this great loss for them, there's also a gain for many children whose moms are now doing things in a much more positive way. That for me is the best part, just seeing that relationship so the children don't feel so abandoned, because a lot of them do.
Another question. Discussions and critiques of incarceration in the United States focus heavily on race and racism. Do you have any observations about the role of race or racism in prison nurseries, either at Bedford Hills or other prison nurseries that you're familiar with?
I would have to say what I've seen over the past of many years is no, I don't see racism there. What I see is a lot of women that are coming in from very rural, poverty-stricken neighborhoods, a lot of them from the upstate regions that are it's all substance abuse related right now. A lot of addiction, a lot of addiction. That's what we're really seeing. In fact, the majority of the mothers that we've been receiving over the last years have been white. While I recognize that it is out there and that there is a long history of racism, particularly within the prisons, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying it does not exist. It does, but in our nursery program, what we're really seeing is women that have been significantly impacted by substance abuse.
So you mentioned that there were different categories that women are denied access to the prison nursery, child protection issues, arson. In your experience, when you look at the demographics of women who are denied by the prison access to the nursery, do you see any racial differences there?
You know, I can't really speak to that because I don't really even know a lot of the women who are denied. Like, that would definitely be more of a question for the people that are actually making those decisions. So no, I can't. I just can't answer that because I don't know. I just see the women that get on. I don't see the women that are denied so much.
So we have two last questions. I mean, one, to what extent in your expertise are these prison nurseries adequate for the needs of mothers and babies? If not, are there other options, or how could the prison nurseries be improved?
I think that there needs to be more of them. I think that any of the prison nurseries that exist are all doing an excellent job, and they need to be there. It's very discouraging that there's only 9 of us. And so, which to me means that there are so many children, so many babies being separated from their mothers. So when I look at our program in particular, I see that we are providing something that is extremely necessary. Because like I've said, a lot of these babies, if not for our program, would either be going into the foster care system or would be going to families that are already taxed, both financially, emotionally, and otherwise. So we're not talking about a baby going into a middle to upper class community, which would be able to offer them all the bells and whistles and everything that they need. That would not be the case with 95% or maybe more of our babies. So I think these nursery programs are needed. I think they're essential. I think that the services I know that we offer, from parenting to prenatal to providing them with a very extensive education, with teaching them how to raise their baby, teaching them how to live successfully on, you know, within a community, and teaching them how to be a mother is not only so important for the women, but particularly for the baby. Because like I said, that first year is so important. So being able to provide a safe environment for those babies to live with their mothers, like I said, they don't know that they're in prison. All they know is that they're in an environment with where all their needs are getting met and all mom's needs are getting met. And I get that it's that there are rules and that it is prison, but I also know that most of the women that come through our program will say that a program like this really changed their lives in many ways and really was the best place for their baby to be.
Your comment about how much these participants have appreciated the program is a great comment on which to conclude. I've been speaking with Jane Silfen, Director of Programs for Our Children. Thanks so much for your work, Jane, and for our conversation today.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Children of Incarcerated Caregivers International Prison Nursery Podcast. We're your hosts, Paul Dosh and Barbara Fry, advisory board members of Children of Incarcerated Caregivers. To learn more about our organization and view additional materials, documents, and research from this episode, you can visit our website at cicmn.org. This episode was recorded in September 2021 in collaboration with the University of Minnesota's Human Rights Program. This podcast was created with research from our student collaborators, McKenna Haas, Olivia Hudson, and Jesse Raymond. Episodes contain original music by David Smith and production by Brian Carnell. Don't forget to tune into the next episode. We hope to see you there.